It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you today. We got so much going on. I had a conversation earlier today with John Paul MacIsaac, who you know, if you watch Fox, you know exactly who he is, if you're a newsman. He is the guy who reported the Hunter Biden laptop, as for what was in it and all that sort of stuff. And I got a chance to talk to him. We spoke for a little under 20 minutes, and I'm going to let you hear that in the second hour of the program today. John Stewart's going to come by. We're going to catch up on the battle for judges and all that went on with the Republican convention over the weekend. And we'll be taking your phone calls as well, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Really incredible to see over the weekend the talking points. As it relates to the economy, I believe the economy is fundamentally the most important issue facing anybody in the entire country. I believe it is the economy first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth. And then you get into like safety, you get into crime, you get into border, you get into Ukraine and China and all that other stuff. But economy is the most important thing. And over the weekend, you saw this group of sad sacks kind of making the tour. Making the tour around the Sunday shows, talking about how good a job Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. is. He's over in Tokyo today. He was in South Korea, then he went to Tokyo, and he reset our China policy, kind of just like on the fly. We'll talk about that too. But this is Brian Deese. Brian Deese is one of these crazy, super smart Democrat economists, if you just ask him. Worked for Blackstone, made millions of dollars, so you know I'm kind of where he's coming from. Brian Deese is talking, you know, we can weather this potential recession. Cut 11.
Our economy is in a transition from what has been the strongest recovery in modern American history to what can be a period of more stable and resilient growth that works better for families. There's no doubt we face serious global challenges right now, inflation first and foremost among them, and it's hitting families hard. But there's also no doubt that the United States is in a better position than any other major country around the world to address inflation without giving up all the economic gains that we've had. And that's because of the strength of our recovery. We have the strongest job market. We have businesses investing. We have Americans actually increasing their savings. And
so you've got people hiring. You've got people increasing their savings. You've got all that sort of stuff going on. But the fact of the matter is, I'm telling you right now, I think we're in a recession. I think we have slipped into a recession. You will never know because those numbers lag moving forward. And they're going to try to come around on the other side and say, yeah, we had a recession, but it was the best recession we ever had in American modern history. The recession that we had as a result of the overspending with COVID, it was actually the best recession that we've ever had. And if we don't have a recession, we stopped the recession. They're basically betting every single spot on the craps table. And it's just so fitting that the Biden administration will be betting at the craps table. That is the thing you have to kind of understand about what they're doing, because the messaging is perfectly in sync. It is perfectly in sync. And I know it sounds crazy to say that, but you just heard from Brian Deese. Let me go to number three. I'm going to go to number three instead. Stephanie Cutter, who was once upon a time an advisor to the Obama-Biden administration. Now she's going out doing cleanup on the Sunday shows. No doubt she'll be back involved when they get to the midterm elections. Steph Cutter says Joe Biden's moving us forward. Go.
Inflation is high. Mm. People are just generally exhausted mm-hmm. by crisis after crisis after crisis. And there's very little, you know, the president has put forward an agenda to deal with inflation. We saw how quickly he worked on the infant formula crisis. He's handling Ukraine, pulling the world together and rebuilding alliances against authoritarian governments like Putin. You know, by any metric, with the exception of inflation, this country has moved forward.
Inflation is a huge metric. It's not any metric other than inflation. It's huge. And she uses the baby formula model as defense on inflation. Doesn't work. Bringing the countries together on Ukraine doesn't work regarding inflation. Inflation is bad. How bad is it? This is cut number one. I'm going to go cut one. Mark Penn is a pollster, former Clinton pollster, Democrat pollster. He comes out and says this is how bad it is for Biden one.
56% of the country believes that they are economic situation is worsening. And so consequently, only 33% think that the president is handling inflation. These are ratings under which no president could really get reelected unless they were, I guess, running against Attila the Hun.
In addition, what's about to happen is something shocking. It's going to harm a lot of states. What you're going to have is increases in premiums on Obamacare. Those notices are going to be going out in October and early November. They're going to get the sticker shock. The raising of the premiums and the prices will not go into effect until you get into 2023. But they're going to be announced coming up in the next 3 or 4 or 5 months. That's when they're going to start showing up in people's mailboxes. People in California are expecting a 71% increase in Obamacare premiums. All right. Now, what are the Democrats doing? Well, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are all trying to figure out how they can do reconciliation. And what they're going to do with the reconciliation bill is throw a bunch of crap into the bill. Stuff like tax hikes and more spending and the Build Back Better plan that is doomed to fail. And what they're going to try to do is purposely crash this bill, not getting any support from the Republicans. If they put a clean bill helping 12 million people out who are poor, that would be under consideration, I think, by the Republicans, but they're going to try to jam a bunch of stuff in and break it. And that's what's going to happen. When we come back, I'm going to let you hear what Joe Biden said over in Tokyo about how it is we can fix this looming maybe recession that may or may not be coming. We'll give you all of that straight ahead. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Boomer, how the road? News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, 704-570-1110. Good to be here with you. There's a lot of stuff going on out here in the world. It's really quite remarkable. In a few minutes, I'm going to tell you what's going on with some of these big retailers, you know, Walmart and Target. Remember when you would go in and the shelves were all empty? Now it appears that they may start to have the opposite problem. They may have ordered too much stuff. And so now they're looking at a couple of challenges. Let me go to this, though. I was talking about Biden being in Tokyo. He was in South Korea. Then he goes to Tokyo and he's talking about the economy. They ask him, OK, what about this looming recession that looks to be likely coming our way? Let's go with this first cut. He talks about the possibility of the recession.
Here's the situation. And when it comes to the gas crisis, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place that, God willing, when it's over, will be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when this is over. You see what Europe is doing relative to the importation of Russian gas. You see, anyway, I won't go through it all, but and what I've been able to do to keep it from getting even worse, and it's bad. The price of gas at the pump is something that I told you, heard me say before, would be a matter of great discussion at my kitchen table when I was a kid growing up. It's affecting a lot of families.
Did you hear what he said in the front part of that clip? He was asked about the looming recession. But did you hear what he says in the front part of that clip? He makes it sound like he is not just cooperating, but engineering the explosion in gas prices. TJ, re-rack that clip. I only want like the first like 15, 20 seconds. He's taking credit for high gas prices because it's going to aid the pagan caucus, who is desperate to have us get off the filthy, dirty, awful fossil fuels. Go.
Here's the situation.
Okay.
And when it comes to the gas crisis.
Yes.
We're going through an incredible transition.
What kind?
That is taking place that, God willing, when it's over, will be stronger and
how?
The world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels.
Stop right there. So we're going to make fossil fuels so expensive that people are going to be clamoring and demanding for electric cars and bus rides. Is that walking? Unicycles? the stupid scooters that I see every place in every city that I drive around in, the Lime scooters and all the scooters that you use your credit card to get to, fro, and hither, dither, and yon. So Joe Biden, wait, he knows that it's hurting the families. He says, oh, the prices are so expensive. The prices are so high. He's tubing. He is tubing the fossil fuel market on purpose to stick it to poor people. What kind of a president does that? A president that wants to sell you on more welfare. This is the other clip I want you to hear. He starts bragging about how we need Build Back Better. He's really meaning Build Back Biden badly. Go.
We have released over 257 million barrels of oil, I should say. Us and the rest of the world were convinced to get involved. It's helped, but it's not been enough. We also find ourselves in a situation where we have food shortages. Food shortages because of Ukraine. There are literally millions of bushels of oil, of grain being held up in Ukraine that would fundamentally impact positively on the market in terms of bringing down food prices across the board. So we're finding ourselves in a position where we're working very hard with American farmers and American agricultural products to provide more fertilizer and a whole range of things. This is going to be a haul. This is going to take some time. But in the meantime, it seems to me the best thing I can do, in addition to try to get the Middle Eastern countries, including OPEC, to raise the production of oil and move along that route, is
not
to see
happen.
To it that we continue to grow our economy, create jobs. And the other thing is, there's a second way. I know you don't want to talk about it. People don't want to talk about it right now, and I won't take up the time, but there's a second way to impact on inflation in terms of people's daily costs.
Spending.
If you're able to have child care at 7% of your income, if you're able to be in a position where we were able to provide for a tax cut for middle-class people and working-class people,
Spending.
All those things would be very helpful. But when we have a 50-50 Senate, it means we have 50 presidents, and I'm having a little trouble getting some of these things passed. But
nobody's clamoring for more free junk, man. Nobody is clamoring. Nobody is clamoring for universal this or universal that. You're going to create more inflation, Joe. And can I just ask a question? Am I the only person that remembers when Joe Biden had an actual voice? When did we suddenly start whispering everything? When did we suddenly start talking like that? I mean, is there something wrong with the man? Does the man get regular medical attention? Because half the time he's asleep, the other half the time he's saying words that don't make any sense. He's talking about Ukrainian wheat and he's mentioning oil. He's talking about Ukrainian oil and he's mentioning wheat. What is wrong with this guy? Do you see how weak he looks? How weak we look to the world stage? You would throw me out of this seat if I got on the mic and I said, hey, it's going to be a great day today at WBT. I got a great stuff happening. And it's a radio, TV, radio, and food and stuff. And I don't know what I'm going to talk about it right now, but I just really, because you don't want to. You would be so sad. You'd be like, what is wrong with him? Nobody in the country asks the question, what is wrong with this guy? Seriously, he went on earlier today to single-handedly reset Chinese policy. Now he's going to commit your sons and daughters to go fight in Taiwan if the Chi-Coms jump off with us. Despite the fact that General Milley, CRT boss himself, General Milley is out there saying, no, we're going to send any troops to that. Well, that's not really our policy. Well, quick, pick up the phone, General Milley, like you did with Trump, and call the Chi-Coms and tell them we're not really going to invade. That's your job, last I thought, tipping off the enemy. 704-570-1110 News Talk, 1110, 993 WBT. Anna Erickson's got the update. News Talk, 1110, 99.3 WBT. This message coming in to me. It's pretty hard to send your kid to infant care in preschool if there's no formula to feed them. Absolutely right. Spoken like a true parent. Spoken like a true parent. Absolutely 100% right. But this is what you got going on here, folks. Okay? This is what you have. You have inflation. You have this nonsense with we're going to have a recession. It's not going to be that bad. It's not going to stink. It's not going to be bad. We'll be right out of it. We probably are already in it. In fact, we already had it. We had it last week. Get your booster. If you get your booster, where do we get our booster against the Biden recession? Where do we get the booster against Bidenflation? Oh, I know a guaranteed way to do it. Knock all the D's out of office in November. But watch out, because there will be a kamikaze Congress. I guarantee you that. There will be a kamikaze Congress. These people are going to be swinging for the fences. No doubt in my mind. Let's see what we're going to do here real quick. Okay, let's go over here and talk to Jim. Hello, Jim. What's going on?
Yes, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Back from a long weekend.
Yes, very good.
I want to let you know I'm alive and kicking out here in the commie curtain.
Okay, that's very good. It's good to have you back. So what did you want to say about baby formula?
By the way, bushels of oil, maybe if they put the oil in barrels instead of bushels, then maybe they'd have an easier time.
That's a very good point. They ought to sell it by the pound. How about that? How about we buy it by
somewhere
the pound?
There's about millions of barrels of wheat outside a refinery. Somebody's scratching their head every time they open up the top on them.
You know what? Do you know what the Russians did? Do you know what the Russians did with the wheat supplies in Ukraine? Do you know what they did? They bombed the wheat supplies that were out there in silos. They dropped gravity bombs and destroyed tons and tons of wheat. Now, this is not going to count against your time because I have apologists for Putin in some of my audience. I've forgiven them already, and I've given them dispensations. But there are apologists. They like to come at me on the socials, and they get angry when I refer to Putin as a Soviet. But nevertheless, Putin's military did. They bombed stores of grain. And by the way, that's not for the Putin apology caucus out there. Fitting that they're a caucus.
Well, what they're going to say is that he was just trying to make puffed wheat. Like the cereal that was shot from guns.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember puffed wheat
he did it. He did it. He did it. I can't stop him now. He did it. He killed the show. Jeez Louise. Oh, my gosh. 37 past. He killed the show. Puffed wheat jokes. Oh, my gosh. He called in on the premise of formula, and Jim killed the show. I'm giving him information. He's doing shtick. Jim, hold on. I'm with Tommy here. We're going over. We're looking at the review. We're going to review the play. Was that a flagrant two, Tim? Tim, was that a flagrant two over there?
Oh, definitely.
That was a flagrant two. That's a flagrant two. He gets one more of those this week. You're out. You got to go. That was a flagrant two on the show. We can't do that. I'm all about inside the paint getting chippy, but come on, you can't do that. I'm already a man. I'm already a man in an emotional ragged edge here with my Celtics. But okay, let's go here. Jill, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How you doing?
You know, the only reason why we still got Biden up is because they don't want Kamala Harris being the president.
No,
they just don't want her there. They know how incompetent she is, and we can't. Can't go from worse to worse. And I mean, it's like the Dumb and Dumber of political. You can't make this stuff up. Crazy. And
this is nuts.
Other than they really do want to destroy the United States, if that's what the Democrats want to do, is completely break us down. That's the only reason why this is continuing to let happen and to continue this to let this and let us all suffer the way that we are, because the man is so incompetent. I mean, when CNN actually starts kind of shaking their heads and SNL is actually doing a bit where they're making fun of Joe, we know there's a problem.
There is.
Right?
There's a huge problem. And the fact of the matter is, I think what people fail to understand is you and I are not rooting for the demise of the country. I don't want to see a president crash and burn, but this is a presidency that is crashing and burning, and that's bad.
This is a country that's crashing and burning.
It is.
This is something that is really... Somebody's got to have the kahunas to say no. And I'm angry at every single one of the Republicans that passed this $40 billion pass bill.
Mm-hmm.
Because what the heck are we doing? We can't even feed babies formula.
That's right.
Because we don't have it. But we're going to go ahead and send other stuff out.
That's right.
Send it to other countries. And I'm all for helping out. But, again, the theory is the airline theory, you're in the plane when they lose pressure, mm-hmm. you put the mask on yourself first and then you help other people.
Amen. Amen. That's exactly right. You're the call of the day. That's absolutely right, Jill. That is positive.
Hello. Am I on?
Hi.
You've just heard the call of the day. Brought to you by High Performance Real Estate Advisors.
How about that, Jill? That was great. Jill's the call of the day. That was spot. You, of course, you put the breathing apparatus on the baby or the president, and then you put it on yourself. And that's what you have to do. And look, if Ukraine needs weapons, come to us and we'll give you weapons. But I'm not going to give you $40 billion in like a pallet of cash like you're the mullahs or somebody. I mean, remember when Obama Biden went and sent all that cash to the mullahs in Tehran in non-sequential currencies? You know, I'm not doing. I have children. One is in college. One is going to go to college very soon. And I know enough not to give them, hey, here's $40,000 that I don't really have. So you guys are going to be all set for the semester, right? In college, $40,000 enough? All right, just come back in 3 weeks and ask me for another $40,000. Now, I'm not comparing warfare to welfare. But what I am saying is, if you need weapons, okay, we'll send you some weapons. But like $40 billion is a lot of money. Have you tried the Saudis yet? They've got buckets of cash. They've got tons of money they could hook you up with. Doug, welcome to the show. Doug?
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Hi. Fred, I'm calling because of the little clip you played from President Biden talking about how we're trying to change over our energy.
We are.
Has anyone ever thought, where do we get our electricity from?
We get our electricity from natural gas is one of the...
Natural gas. Am I correct that we also get it from coal?
Yep. That's right.
Yeah, so I don't think coal is considered a clean energy source, but I could be wrong about that.
Nope.
Secondly is this. If we all go to electric cars...
Yes.
What's it going to do to the power grid when we're all trying to power up our cars every night?
Oh, well done. You know, you're going to have the entire grid get taken down. And that's it.
And I was thinking this, let's say, because I just traveled up back home in New York State a couple of weeks ago. When you're traveling, how many power stations are they going to have at all these rest stops?
Oh, that's right. And you know how long it takes to charge a car battery?
That's just it. So what are you supposed to do, only travel like 300 miles a day?
Well, here's the thing. I've told this story in the past. A friend of mine went over to Israel on a tour. He was seeing cultural sites and things like that. And he stopped at a place where you roll in the car and you got a battery. It's battery powered, right? What they do is they drop the battery. They put a fully charged battery in and you're on your way.
So it's like I work at a distribution center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like what they do to your Lyft.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. And now that, why are we not developing that tech? And believe me, that was told to me in 2012. Okay. So that technology's existed since 2012. Now, I understand we don't have the ability to manufacture 50 million batteries for cars. Oh, wait, then why are we pushing electric cars? I don't get it. It's kind of like
exactly.
You do a barbecue on the weekend, we go get the propane tank. If you turn one in, it's $30. If you don't turn one in, it's $70. I mean, that's how you do it. Let's do it.
Right.
All right. Appreciate you being out there, Doug. I have got the smartest audience in all of talk radio, period. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Boomer Von Cannon.
Yes, sir.
How are those shorts? News Talk 1110 at 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. So earlier I was teasing you all with a piece of information, and I feel like I need to pay that off because people are sitting not just in traffic, but they're sitting there saying, wait a minute, Brett, you didn't tell us about the supply chain thing that you were telling us about earlier. You were saying that it's like gotten kind of freaky with some of these retailers. It is. It has. There's a piece that's running out there. Sam Rowe has this piece, and it is A major shift in the economic narrative could be underway. The overarching narrative of the markets and economy has been one of strong demand meeting lagging supply, a dynamic that has caused inflation to surge. While most signs suggest these trends continue to persist, a handful of anecdotes from the past week suggest this narrative could be changing. What? Signs are that inventories are no longer depleted. Supply chain disruptions have been reflected by depressed inventory and sales ratios. In fact, many businesses have been complaining that sales would be stronger if they could only keep their shelves stocked. According to a Census Bureau report published Tuesday, business inventories grew 2% in March from the prior month. The inventory sales ratio improved marginally but remained lean. In earnings calls last week, however, retail behemoths Walmart and Target suggested the problem could be a thing of the past for them. We like the fact that our inventory is up because so much of it is needed to be in stock on our side counters. But a 32% increase is higher than we want. We will work through most of or all of the excess inventory over the next couple of quarters. That's Doug McMillon, CEO of Walmart. While anticipated a post-stimulus slowdown in these categories and expected the consumers to continue refocusing their spending away from goods and services, we didn't anticipate the magnitude of the shift. So think about this. You had this boom in desire. You had short supply. Now you've had inflation take off. People don't have the available cash like they did, and they're slowing down their purchasing. So it's like quite literally, may I use the phrase, I don't want to offend anybody, a teeter-totter, you know, a teeter-totter. And so one end of the teeter-totter is the supply. The other end of the teeter-totter is the consumer. And then the consumer goes way up and their supply is very low. And you see how that kind of goes. You go, okay, we go down and it goes up. We go down and it goes down. And that's what we've got now. So they got to get this thing right. So now you're going to go into stores and you're going to be like, wow, I've never seen so many canisters of Nestle Quick. I don't have any money. This is a bummer. This is the problem that we're looking at here, folks. You can't fix everything, but you can fix certain things. Let me take this call real quick from Winston. Hey, Winston, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling.
You know, the supply chain disruption, been looking at this in the baby formula aisle. It's basically a phenomenon that was created by the federal government. Basically, they were footing the bill to all the WIC people getting the formula for, you know, from the food stamps.
Right.
And the corporations could, you know, they jacked their prices up. And, rarely do you see an alternative. You know, there's this thing called breastfeeding. When did we forget how to breastfeed the mothers out there? And I have to blame this to a lot of, mothers are better off breastfeeding, their children are more healthier. But, a lot of these women, I hate to say it, they're too selfish.
Hold on. I don't think it's a selfishness. I think, you know, women who are breastfeeding, you know, if they get stressed, it can be very difficult to breastfeed. So now all of a sudden you're like, hey, we're out of formula. You better start producing for this kid. And now you're stressed out and now you can't. And so there is a lot of factors involved in this, Winston. It's not selfish. I don't think it's selfish.
Well,
it's not selfish.
It's the part of the modern female.
No, I don't. No, that's, come on. That right there, that was like peak mansplaining. I'm sorry. And I don't even use that word because I don't even know what it means, except, you know, whatever. But you can't sit there. Winston, you're a grown man. You can't sit there and cast aspersions and motivations on women over breastfeeding issues. I remember the movie Back to School. I remember Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School. And I remember Rodney Dangerfield in Easy Money. And that's a different world. That's 1982. That's 1985. Sam Kinison was still alive. In fact, he was in Back to School. And the fact of the matter is you can't asperse like that. Cast aspersions. You can't. I always wonder, like, if if you get training to become a witch or a warlock or a wizard, do you have a choice? Can you say, I want to learn how to cast spells? I want to learn how to cast curses. Who asks? Is that like postdoctorate work to say, I want to learn how to cast aspersions? I want to sit here and I want to cast aspersions as far as the eye can see. Look at you, you lazy baby feeder. Here's my aspersion. You can't do that, Winston. That's not right. I'm telling you, because I have been around the having of children. I didn't actually give birth, but I'm just saying, you stress women out and it becomes a tough thing. It's not selfishness. Every mom wants to make sure their kid is taken care of. And I'm not going to accept any more aspersions. But you can call me back any other time. You actually didn't kill the show because the hour is up. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you on this Monday. Be careful driving around out there. It's treacherous. I am honored to have in studio with me somebody whose reputation and whose work I greatly admire. Greatly admire. John Stewart is in the house with us. Hello, John. How are you?
Hey, Brett. Good to be back.
It's good to have you here. This is like prime season for political junkies, right?
Oh, man. It was crazy. And the primary rolled right into our annual state convention. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have asked for a better schedule. Now, you know, the conventions are scheduled a year, 2 years out in advance.
Right.
And then the judges at the last minute changed the primary schedule. So for, you know, that to end, have the primary on Tuesday and then start our convention 2 days later, Thursday.
Right.
I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better schedule. It was great.
You had the energy bubbling. I mean, everybody's buzzing and talking about this. Are you, from talking to folks in general, before you even went to the convention, what's the sense of enthusiasm, excitement? I mean, I'm imagining it's explosive, but what's the feeling like out there?
Yeah, there's a lot of anticipation. I mean, people are excited for this election cycle. You know, even before the primary, for the last year, you know, I've traveled the state quite a bit, going to all these different functions and meetings and whatnot. And they're all breaking records, attendance records, mm-hmm. fundraising records. I mean, people are they want to get involved. They're excited. And I mean, they're just showing up for everything. You know, everything we do is kind of on the 4 year cycle with presidential cycle.
Sure.
So during those 4 years, we'll have two odd year conventions. That's when we elect all our party officers from the state chairman on down. Those are always well attended because, mm-hmm. you know, you're voting for the state chairman. Then you have your presidential year that is always packed.
Right.
So this year is usually the convention that is smaller than the rest. You know, a lot of people, because there's no real business to do. You're just going to see candidates. You know, it was still slammed full. I mean, even the off-year convention was packed to the gills. So people are just excited. They just want to go, and they're ready.
What is the main concern, or one of the couple of main concerns that you're hearing? I mean, is it economy? Is it voter integrity? What is it that you're hearing the most from talking to folks on the ground?
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it's like a new crisis every week.
It is.
You know, yeah, the economy, of course, and gas prices, which, you know, I mean, all that rolls together. You know, I'm looking at Facebook, people just talking, you know, to talk about just going to the grocery store, mm-hmm. and they're paying outrageous prices for half the food they used to get. Mm-hmm. And people are starting to really get concerned, like, hey, you know, this is getting serious.
So you get to the convention. Obviously, North Carolina is a very, it's a large state. It's a diverse state. You have a lot of competing different sort of interests in the state. Does it vary? Do the main issues that you're hearing from folks on the ground, are they variable from region to region? How are you kind of seeing that?
Well, in a way, I mean, of course, you got your big city areas, you know, Raleigh and Charlotte, and then yeah. you have the rural areas. I mean, the farmers are really concerned. I mean, mm-hmm. little things that we don't think about, like just the price of fertilizer has tripled. And they're like, you know, how are we going to I mean, if they do plant everything, that the prices of food is getting ready to skyrocket. Like, I mean, you think it's bad now.
It's crazy.
It's going to be really bad. So, you know, the rural areas are kind of, you know, where the farmers are. They're more concerned about that. But, you know, in this Charlotte's a banking city, you know.
Sure.
You know, as you were saying, you know, we're getting ready to hit a recession, it looks like. That's going to hit the banks and the financial markets. And you know, so while it's kind of different, but it's all kind of falls under the same umbrella of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the driving force. And, you know, I think it will be all the way through the elections.
John Stewart joining us here. So at the convention, my understanding is as the excitement built across the couple of days, you had a lot of passion, especially towards the end of the convention. People were really, really fired up with the speeches.
Oh, it was great. And we had a lot of good speakers. I mean, before the convention, I truthfully didn't even know these guys, but we had the Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes come.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be a rock star. He has a great future. And then the Virginia Attorney General, Jason Mayers, he got elected with the...
with Youngkin.
Youngkin and the Vice...
Lieutenant Governor.
So, I mean...
Winsome Sears.
Exactly. And both of them, you know, they're set... You know, they're the first ones... You know, he's the first Hispanic elected statewide in Virginia, and Reyes was the first... Filipino elected mm-hmm. statewide in Utah. So, I mean, you know, they're good guys, and man, they have stories to tell. And, you know, it's the American story. You know, both of them are first generation Americans, and here they are, you know. Their story is the Republican story. I mean, you know, they worked hard, they came from absolutely nothing, and here they are, you know, successful. You know, statewide elected officials.
You're a guy that you talk to a lot of people in business day in and day out. What are you hearing, and then how did that translate? You know, the idea of labor shortages, taxes, regulation, just killing everybody.
It's scary. I mean, I have a friend who owns a restaurant in Monroe, and he said he's down like 30 employees and hasn't even had an interview in 6 months. And he's paying like $20 an hour for wait staff.
Wow.
And I'm like, how do you sustain that?
Is that 20 an hour plus tips?
Exactly.
20 plus
tips.
And TJ, I'm out of here, TJ. I gotta get me a job.
Yeah, but you know, so
I mean, that's the thing.
It's serious, you know. At my work, it used to be, you know, people wanted to get a job, you had to know somebody to get somebody. Man, we can't keep people there. You know, they show up, and a week later, they're gone. It's crazy.
And gas. I imagine you use a little bit of gasoline.
Just a little bit.
In your work. I mean, this. I played that clip from Biden talking about how, well, we're transitioning right now. Did you vote for transition? I didn't vote for transitioning off of energy.
Well, we're definitely transitioning from the best economy to the worst.
That's exactly right. John Stewart is our guest here in the studio. Phone number 704-570-1110. One of the most important offices that are up in this go-round is going to be judges, right?
Yeah, oh, man.
Judges are hugely important. There's a reason why the districts are cut the way they are and all that. So what I want to do is we're going to grab a break here in just a moment. We're going to come back. We want to talk about the judges' implications, what it means, what we're looking at, and how important it is to make sure that you've got people that respect the Constitution, the state Constitution.
Exactly.
All right. John Stewart's our guest. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Hey, Boomer Von Cannon, how are we looking out there? News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull, alongside my good friend John Stewart here in the house with us. John, good to have you back.
Thank you, Brett. It's always love to be at WBT.
Now, listen, you were at the state convention, the Republican state convention, this past weekend, and one of the issues that comes up that's hugely important and really overlooked, I think, by the average person are judges in the state, like Congress. Lieutenant governor, governor, AG, but judges are huge.
It is. In fact, you know, I tell people, yeah, as important as all these other races are, and as important, of course, as the Senate race and all that, nothing matters more than these judges. We, you know, you can control the House, you can control the Senate. It doesn't matter, the North Carolina House and Senate.
Sure.
But if the Supreme Court just, you know, throws laws out based on their feelings, you know, then it doesn't matter. I mean, you can pass all the laws you want, but if they just come in and start canceling them, it doesn't matter. So that's why it's so critical that we vote for constitutional conservative judges that will look at the Constitution and read it as the Constitution and not and interpret it and not try to figure out, you know, what they want it to say. I mean, the Constitution's pretty clear.
It's pretty
clear. This is what it says.
Right.
And so it's not, well, what I think they meant by that is this. No, it's the Constitution. It's your job to read it, interpret, you know, and rule on based on the Constitution, not based on what outcome you want. And we can see that, especially with these congressional races, that maps that they just threw out and just drew their own.
Mm-hmm.
There is nowhere in the Constitution that gives them the authority to draw legislative maps. Now, they could, you know, rule those ones are, you know, unlawful or whatever and send it back to the legislators to fix.
Right.
There is no place that says, okay, you don't like them, draw your own. So if they're going to do that with that law, you know, they can do that with anything. And what's really important is, you know, it looks like Roe versus Wade is probably going to be overturned at the federal level.
Right.
Now, a lot of people think, well, that, you know, outlaws abortion. Well, it doesn't. It sends it back to the states.
Right.
And so going into 2022, 2023, it's going to be critical that we have lawyers on the judges on the Supreme Court that will mm-hmm. look at the actual Constitution and rule on that way and not their emotions.
Mm-hmm. Not read into it and say, oh, the penumbra of the moon and the whole thing. And
it's funny. Chief Justice Paul Newby was there speaking, and he had said Speaker Moore called him, and they were kind of talking about the budget for the whole judicial branch. And he said whether he found a way to cut the budget, he said they were going to start looking at the judges' records, and those who want to be legislators and make law from the bench, they're just going to give them legislator pay, which is much, much, much less than a judge's make.
Oh, that's a good call right there. I think that's one way of motivating the right sort of outcomes, I guess, or the proper look at the law itself. I was always surprised, and maybe you were as well, during the time of the lockdowns and the shutdowns and all this sort of stuff, that there wasn't more judicial relief in the state for all the stuff that Governor Cooper was doing.
Well, again, you know, the Supreme Court is controlled by Democrats, so they were not going to go against the, you know, a Democrat governor. A lot of this stuff was brought up, you know, mm-hmm. and said, hey, this is just not constitutional. You can't just change the rules to an election in the middle of the election had started.
Absolutely.
And they started and they were changing rules, you know, and we're like, you know, but once you get to the Supreme Court, there's nowhere else to go, you know, to try to get remedy. And so the legislators have passed new laws regarding elections and the way that they can do stuff like that that will prevent that going forward. But now it's up to just getting good, solid justices on the Supreme Court and the appellate courts.
Let's talk about the broader picture here. Obviously, being the out party nationally, if you're the out party, you know, you've got a lot of momentum, you got a lot of energy behind you. Was there a concern that there'd be fall off in terms of enthusiasm, given some of the divide that exists inside, you know, among the Republicans? You sort of got the Trump wing, you sort of got the McConnell wing of things. Was there a concern in talking to folks that there might be a little drop off in enthusiasm?
You know, not really. I mean, you always have some people to the extremes of one end or the other saying, oh, yeah, I'm not going to do that. But for the most part, most people are Republican, you know, support the whole party idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's take, for instance, the Senate race with between Bud and McCrory.
Sure.
Just because you supported Bud or McCrory doesn't mean you hated the other guy.
Right.
And like, oh, you know, that guy's so terrible. And if he wins, I'm never going to do it. It's, you know, different shades of red.
Yeah.
You know, they're still both Republicans and, mm-hmm. you know, you agree with them 90% of the time. So at the end of the day, you know, we have a strong slate, you know, from the U.S. Senate all the way down to the county level.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the Republicans are fired up. And so even if they're, you know, one or two of their people lost in the primary, they're still coming out and they're still voting.
And what's incredible is you have all these drivers happening at the same time. So you have the economy concerns, you have gas prices, you have the inability to get labor, you've got a potential recession, but you've also got, at the same time, you've got social issues that are out there galvanizing people, CRT stuff and what's in the curriculum and what school choice and all those sorts of things. All in all, it's about respecting the individual's right and choice is ultimately what it is, rather than government. Either you're defending the government institution or you're defending the individual's rights. And I think that's the huge issue.
Yeah. And that's one of the big distinctions between the parties. One's, you know, the party of the big government,
mm-hmm.
and one believes in limited government and more of individuals and, you know, the rugged individualism that Rush used to talk about, you know.
That's right. That's right. Something that has not ever come up yet, though. Guns. Nobody's talked about guns. Guns are not an issue. You know why? Because people respect the Second Amendment here, which is what I like.
Well, I saw a joke on Facebook today. Somebody said they called their stockbroker and asked him what they should be buying. And he said, food and ammunition.
Oh, gosh. There you go. All right. John Stewart. So Yeah. So give me your closeout on this thing, my friend.
Well, I just wanted to mention tomorrow we have a big event in the Charlotte area. It's the North Carolina, the Republican Family Values Summit. And we have Vice President Mike Pence will be there. Ted Budd will be there and Ralph Reed.
Wow.
It's a great event. It's a free event. If more information, just go to nc.gop.
NC.gop.
That's all you need. No .com, nothing like that. NC.gop. It's a free event, but you have to register in advance. But you go in there and get all the details.
That's a great, what a great slate of people coming in. That's awesome.
Powerful conservative voices right there.
Outstanding. John Stewart, man, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you being there. That's John Stewart. NC.gop for more information and to register. I'm Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110, 993 WBT. Anna Erickson's got the update. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show, 704-570-1110. So I had the opportunity earlier today to catch up with John Paul McIsaac. He is the person that you know as the person who had the Hunter Biden laptop in his possession. It was never picked up. He took possession of that laptop in April of 2019. Many people don't realize that. In April of 2019 is when he got his hands on that laptop. And it was not released publicly until the election in 2020. I had a chance to catch up with him. We all know what's on that laptop. We've heard it over and over again, the pictures, the porn, I wanted to find out, though, from John Paul, his personal experience. And so we had that opportunity to do so. What did you think when the world turned its attention to you and you were kind of caught in the crosshairs?
Well, I wasn't ready for it. I was still hoping that the world would never know who I was. I had avoided going to the press for so long. I tried to go to the FBI and members of Congress, and the whole time I'm using other people to represent me and try to get the word out. And I feel like that I wasn't doing enough to get that word out. So when I eventually went to Rudy Giuliani, I knew I was exposing myself and the risk of the world knowing what I was trying to do, and if I didn't have an opportunity to defend myself and my actions, I would lose my business, I would lose my community, I'd be forced to flee my home. And unfortunately, when the digital Iron Curtain descended on October 14th and the world was blocked from hearing the story, I was also blocked from defending myself, and I had to end up closing my shop and leaving town.
You have been quite literally made into the villain in many corners, and some of the most profoundly unfair stuff that I've seen has come from social media outlets, Twitter, etc. And you've had it. You've had enough of this, and you're starting to fight back, right?
Well, I tried fighting back at first, because when Twitter labeled my actions hacking, because they blocked the story or their justification for blocking that material and blocking the New York Post from talking about it for 2 weeks, was because it was hacked material, and therefore it labeled me a hacker. So I went after Twitter, because if I'm ever going to run a computer business again, having the word hacker attached to anything that I do is just setting me up for failure. So I went after Twitter. Unfortunately, I was made an example never to go after big tech. Not only was I my case thrown out when the judge that was assigned was switched out with an Obama-appointed judge, that she instantly threw the case out with prejudice and then awarded Twitter Florida slap statute. So I had to now pay Twitter back all their legal fees. So it pretty much destroyed me. And I didn't think I'd ever have an opportunity to defend my actions in a court of law and hold these people accountable. And so I wrote a book about it, and thinking that maybe the court of public opinion, I would have a chance if I had a, had one more outlet to tell my story. And luckily, the America Project back in April stepped in, and they wanted to fund my legal efforts. So now I'm back in the ring going after these people and trying to hold them accountable for the colluding to the notion that I was part of a Russian plot to affect the election. And I mean, that's paramount to treason when you're being accused of colluding with a foreign power to affect the outcome of election. So I'm not going to stand for it. And luckily, I have now legal help to do that. And I'm hoping the book will help defend me in the court of public opinion. The legal battles will hold these people accountable in the court of law.
John Paul McIsaac joining us. He's the author of the book American Injustice, My Battle to Expose the Truth. It's going to be coming out, or it is coming out November of 2022. Look, you're a patriot. You come from a patriotic family, a military family. You were somebody who battled a visual impairment and certainly found an escape in the creation of computer graphics. I mean, this is what you did for your living. This wasn't some political sort of mission that you were on. This is something you were doing to provide for yourself. And the reality is, when he drops that laptop off, doesn't come back to claim it, it becomes your property as part of that contract. And you could have, I mean, I'm just saying this, you're not saying this, but I'm just saying, you know, you could have sold it to the highest bidder. You could have done something really, really nasty. Instead, you tried to do something patriotic and get it to the authorities.
Well, I believe in the system. I believe that we have measures in place. I needed some level of protection. I think we've all seen how the Secret Service has been acting as the Biden fixer service for the last decade, whether they're pulling guns out of trash cans or waking him up when he's spending too much on his dad's credit card. It's I had a legitimate fear for my safety. So my actions initially were born out of self-preservation. It really wasn't until there were the whispers of the impeachment that I realized that I'm sitting on something that could spare this nation the embarrassment of having to endure its third impeachment. So I really wanted to shift gears, but I still had to remain partisan or nonpartisan, because I didn't. I was still fearful of the FBI. We had seen what happened to Roger Stone that previous January. We had seen what the FBI and the Justice Department had been weaponized over the past 3 years during the Mueller investigation. I knew the system was in place for a reason, and I had to believe in the system, because when you don't believe in the system fails. But I didn't trust the FBI enough, so I made a copy of the drive, and I think that's probably one of the smartest things I've done in my life.
I think nobody would have an issue with that at all, because it's a dangerous, crazy world, and that's the reality of how it is. When you first started, and I don't want you to give up anything that's, you know, going to put you in jeopardy or secrecy or anything like that. But I can't imagine what it's like. I'm a relatively a public figure. You were not a public figure. Now, all of a sudden, you're thrust into the middle of this as a public figure. When you start getting the threats and the comments and the things that are coming your way that are making you feel unsafe, who do you, like, I don't even know who you turn to for that. You call the local cops. Like, who do you turn to when you're starting to get all this negativity coming your way from people who are, you know, let's hope for the best that they're just a bunch of keyboard maniacs. But I mean, what do you do then, John? You know,
well, I on October 14th, when my information was leaked, it was instantaneous. And I get it. People are upset. They're angry. They're lashing out. And when the area codes are from San Diego or New York, I'm less concerned. But when I started to see area codes from Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and well, that's an 856 number right across the river. That's 20 minutes away. Then I started to get concerned, and I reached out to Bob Costello, who was my point of contact. He was Rudy Giuliani's lawyer and pretty much the only buddy there that I talked to. And I said, Bob, you gotta help me out. I'm getting a little scared here. And he got on the phone with a gentleman, as he described, crusty New York detective, who then made a phone call with a Wilmington detective. And then the next morning, I had a detective at my shop filling out a terroristic threat report. And then from that point on, pretty much the entirety that I was at that shop, I had a Wilmington trooper parked in front of my shop. And I can't begin to thank the Wilmington Police Department and Bob Costello and that crusty New York detective for stepping up, because I was concerned initially. That's why I sent my father to reach out to the FBI in Albuquerque, because I was in self-preservation. I was afraid of good old boy politics. And it turns out I had such amazing support from the local police department, and I can't begin to thank them enough. And my mother can't begin to thank them enough either. She's
all. All right, we are going to continue this conversation straight ahead. Let you hear it. We'll take your reactions as well. 704-570-1110. My conversation with John Paul MacIsaac. He is the fellow that you know as the computer store owner who took in the Hunter Biden laptop. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Boomer, how the road? Yeah, it is the Brett Winterbull Show. Continuing our conversation with John Paul MacIsaac, he of the computer store that inherited in large measure the laptop from Hunter Biden. And coming up here, he conveys the real fear he had because of the power that he was dealing with. And not his power, but the power he was dealing with in one of the most powerful families in this country, really in the world now, certainly the most powerful in the state of Delaware. John Paul MacIsaac and I continue our conversation, and there's a couple of things that are going to have you sitting back and saying, wow. Where are you? I don't mean geographically, but where are you now, kind of in your mind, in your head, looking back at this? Does this shake your belief in the system, in this country, in any of that, or are you just that much more resolved to soldier through this?
Well, I realize that this was so much bigger than me on when there was that collaborative and culminated effort to block this story, to have social and mainstream media be prepared for this to happen. They were ready. There's no way that you can move from a 6:30 when the article came out to a complete shutdown of the internet by 9:30 without somebody giving. And even Zuckerberg said it. And before Congress on the, I think, October 25th, that the FBI reached out to Facebook, Twitter, and Google to warn them of a massive dump of foreign intelligence right before the election. So they were ready. And when I realized that this was no longer about me being called a Russian, this was like, who told everybody to call me a Russian? Who told everybody? Now I've realized that my purpose in this is, yeah, I'd love to clear my name, but I've been given an opportunity. I've exposed this corruption and this collusion, and now it's up to making sure in November people act on that. And I have a responsibility to continue to fight and put pressure on these people, and that's what I'm going to do now. They took away my business. They took away my position in my community. And when you take away things from people, they have a tendency to fight harder. So I don't know what their end game is, but all it's doing is making me fight more.
If you had an opportunity to say something to the president or to Hunter, I mean, is there a message you'd want to convey to them?
Well, pay your bills, I guess, would be the first one. But, you know, I can't imagine Thanksgiving is very comfortable in that household. But, you know, it's... on a conservative standpoint, we don't cheat. And this is what we get as a nation. When decisions are made, when there's collusion at this level between the mainstream media we're supposed to trust, the digital tech giants that we depend on every day, something like Pew Report said 85% of people get their news through digital media and digital content. If there's a filter to that that prefers a certain ideology or presidential candidate, depending on the situation or the day, that's dangerous. And we need to all be aware of that. And I mean, I'm a naive repair guy. Sometimes you got to watch something break before you can fix it. And I think that's what's happened. And I hope we can get to the bottom of it.
Do you regret what you did? Do you have regrets where you say, you know what, I could have just been anonymous. I could have just thrown it in a dumpster somewhere. I could have just whatever. Do you ever have regrets?
No, the only regret I have is right before, like the day before my father went to the FBI with a copy of the drive, and this was October 8th of 2019, I made another copy and I gave it to a friend of mine. And I gave her a manila envelope with a letter, and the letter was addressed to Rudy Giuliani. And it basically said, if you're reading this letter, I'm in a hole somewhere. Please come and find me and explain my situation. And I gave her that, and she had a job for a better part of a year to just keep an eye on me. And if I was ever gone for any period of time unexpectedly, she had explicit instructions to drive up to New York and hand deliver that. And it turned out that eventually I would come to her and grab that envelope and take the drive out, tear up the letter, write a new letter, and then mail that to Rudy Giuliani's office. So on August 28th, 2020. I think that if I had cut out the middleman, when my dad went to the FBI, which was the right thing to do, I still believe that. I think handing over that drive to the lawyer or the president of the United States would have been, because I gave them the better part of, you know, 3/4 of a year to prepare. The FBI was aware of this in October 8th of 2019. They were now aware of this laptop and its contents, and they did nothing.
It's a final question. It's sort of a philosophical one. You can take it any direction you want. Is justice possible in 2022 today? Has it shaken your faith in the system, or do you believe that these are just partisans that, you know, are going to do what they're going to do because they're partisans? Do you still have faith in America?
I absolutely have faith in America. I believe that after the 2020 elections, we now have a microscope on election integrity. So I don't think they're going to be able to squeeze that one by us again. I do think that with the news of Hunter and his Hollywood high-priced lawyer and the offensive measures that they're taking right now, which are very, very sloppy, tells me that they're panicking. And then we're going to see a lot more of that, whether it's a release of a Supreme Court brief or whatever else the rabbit they're going to try to pull out of their hats in the next couple of months. There's going to be a lot more of that. And all of that is an indicator that they're panicking. And I have faith in the system that it'll course correct. And I think the American people are tired and fed up. And a lot of them are disenfranchised because we felt like we were cheated last time. So I think this time around, we're going to make sure that doesn't happen again.
That's John Paul McIsaac, an American citizen caught up in a tremendous whirlwind. And he was labeled a lot of things that he says he is not. Your reaction, your thoughts to what you just heard. 704-570-1110. Another hour straight ahead. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is great to be here with you. It was one heck of an hour, and we're certainly going to be taking a lot of phone calls over the course of the next hour. the third hour. We are underway. It is great to be here. 704-570-1110 is that phone number, and you certainly are more than welcome to be a part of the discussion. President of the United States is overseas. He is spending time over in China. No, talking about China, over in Tokyo. He was in South Korea, then he was in Tokyo, and you know what's crazy? He did an availability at one point with the press, and he took only four pre-selected reporters to give him the questions. Four people. And I don't normally feel badly for the press because, I mean, they've got a pretty cushy job when you think about it. They fly on jets. They go overseas. During their downtime, they get to sightsee. And make no mistake, that does go on, okay? These people go out. They get to have dinners and all kinds of stuff and hang out with people. But the president of the United States calls on four reporters, and it was so ugly to see him pull that sort of a scheme that the reporters ended up saying something to the effect of, wow, we came all this way for that. It's disrespectful. And yet, they can't quit him, to borrow a phrase from a cowboy movie once upon a time. They can't quit him. They can't. He treats them badly, and they can't quit. They can't stop. It's impossible. It's impossible for them. And I don't totally fully get it, but I'm not somebody who's supposed to understand it, I guess. You know, that's the ultimate problem all the way around. So the president of the United States was in Tokyo and was talking about Taiwan and China. And I believe this is cut number 16. Cut number 16, he's talking about the Taiwan situation. China is kind of getting aggressive with it. Let's hear cut 16.
But the United States is committed. We've made a commitment. We support the one China policy. We support all that we've done in the past. But that does not mean that China has the ability, the jurisdiction to go in and use force to take over Taiwan. So we stand firmly with Japan and with other nations that not to let that happen. And my expectation is it will not happen. It will not be attempted. My expectation is a lot of it depends upon just how strongly the world makes clear that that kind of action is going to result in long-term disapprobation by the rest of the community.
Disapprobation. That was the word of the day. Disapprobation. And disapprobation means disapproval. It sounds like a big, terrible word. It just means disapproval. It means the rest of the world will disapprove. Here's what he says the lesson for China ought to be as it relates to Russia and Ukraine.
That's a commitment we made. We are not, look, here's the situation. We agree with a one China policy. We signed on to it and all the attendant agreements made from there. But the idea that it can be taken by force, just taken by force, is just not appropriate. It'll dislocate the entire region and be another action similar to what happened in Ukraine.
Here's the problem with the analogy to Ukraine. You have NATO present there in Europe, so you do have 25, 26 countries that can throw in their support against China. Who are your allies in the Indo-Pacific region that are going to throw in against the Chinese? Are you going to count on the Indians to commit troops against China? Are you going to count on the Philippines? Are you going to count on Indonesia? Are you going to count on Singapore? Are you going to count on Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, South Korea, Japan? Are you going to count on Australia? Are you going to count on all these countries to come in and start supporting a fight against China? Because what the president doesn't quite understand is, if you really wanted to show that you were committed to Taiwan, why not just base nukes in Taiwan? Why not just do it? Why not say, you know what, we believe so much in this mission that we will put nuclear weapons on the ground in Taiwan? What's the downside? What's China going to do about it? You indicated very clearly, Mr. President, that you had intentions of deploying American assets against the communist Chinese if they make a move on Taiwan. I don't disagree with defending Taiwan, but it's awfully late in the game to do that. You should have done that like when you first got into office and your entire national security team was excoriated by the Chinese communists in the military, who told us that we were racist, who told us that we were evil, who told us that we were a bad country, all that stuff. And little Tony Blinken and big Lloyd Austin and Rotundo himself, General Milley, they all sat there and watched as the Chinese communist military, through their foreign ministry, dressed us down in Alaska. In Alaska. At a summit. The time to show you were going to be Biden the tough guy was back then, not now. Not now, I don't think. Send the message earlier, but you didn't. I know that Corn Pop was a bad dude. And I know that Joe Biden fought Corn Pop, who was a bad dude. But here's the other thing I remember. I remember seeing Godzilla movies, and Corn Pop would be no match for Godzilla. I know Godzilla was attacking Tokyo. Don't worry about that. My point is this. You want to show strength to the communist Chinese, you should have done it a year and a half ago, because they know what you're about now. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993-WBT. Boomer.
Yes.
Corn Pop was a bad dude.
Don't mess with Godzilla, man.
Hey, let me tell you something. Godzilla? Are you kidding me? Deep Purple's rendition? Holy, or was that? No, that was, wait a minute. Maybe that wasn't Deep. No, that wasn't Deep Purple. That was the other band. That was Don't Fear the Reaper.
Don't Fear the Reaper.
That was, I'm mixing up all my 70s rock, man. I'm a mess. News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. This is because Joe Biden was in Tokyo, by the way. I suspended the Crossing of the Streams theme just for this one time, Bo Thompson. That's Blue Oyster Cult. I blew that. And then I referenced Godzilla when I was talking about China. So I'm like, I'm a disaster today. It's good to have you back, my friend.
I wasn't sure if it was really my turn. I'm so like
conditioned
to hear the opening riff of the greatest pop song of all time. I didn't know what to do.
That's okay. So tomorrow, if you want, when I come on, you can play the Huey Lewis Crossing of the Streams to make good what we didn't do today.
Okay, that's good. Now I have the pass.
That's right. Bo Thompson, a good afternoon. It's good to be with you, my friend.
Good to talk to you.
So I'm looking at a bunch of different things here. First and foremost, we've got the President of the United States is overseas. He says, listen, if anything happens with China and Taiwan, America is going to get involved. And certainly, you know, I feel like we've got a lot on our plate right now as it relates to Ukraine. We've got inflation issues. We've got gas supply issues, baby formula issues. It's like at some point you got to say, okay, how much is too much to be carting around here? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I was talking to Mick Mulvaney on my show today.
Yes, sir.
And, of course, a lot of times with him, I can pick his brain about what it was like to, for a year or so, be 5 feet from President Trump and sort of react to some of the things that President Trump would say in news conferences or in interviews, and sometimes he would say things that they weren't expecting. And, you know, as a chief of staff and his inner circle team of any president, you have to adjust and maybe even adjust the message a little bit in the wake of what is said by the leader. And so here again today, you know, the headline of the day has been the I think some in his inner circle and Biden's inner circle were taken aback by how unequivocal he was when he was asked about Taiwan.
Right.
And I think it's this, you talk about all the stuff on the plate, and it seems to be this recurring theme of the president's closest handlers have to readjust after so many of these trips and conferences or news conferences that he has, albeit short. He doesn't do many interviews, but he seems to have this recurring theme of saying things that seem to catch the people closest to him off guard a bit.
You know what I miss? I miss the, and we haven't seen it in a while, I get it, but I miss the standing on the airplane and taking questions from the reporters. You and I are old enough to remember when presidents would do that occasionally. They just would stand there kind of in the walkway of the jet as they were flying, and they would be kind of just kicking answers back and forth. I've seen President Obama do it. I saw President Clinton do it. President Bush did it. I don't think I ever saw President Trump do it, and we haven't seen Biden do it. But I like that more spontaneous interaction rather than the scripted out, structured back and forth, because it gives people an opportunity to, you know, to do a follow up question. OK, but what if this happens, then what is your idea on that? And I think it does a greater service to the broader good, I think.
And I saw, I can't remember the exact stat, but, mm-hmm. you know, there are people who are keeping score of how long it's been between
yes.
sit-downs mm-hmm. with President Biden. Now, look, you know, President Reagan was not famous for doing off-the-cuff interviews. He didn't do very many.
That's right.
But he also was president in a different media age than we're in right now.
Very true.
You know, we're long past the advent of 24-hour news, so I think there is an expectation, especially in the 24-hour news / social media age, that it would happen with more frequency than it has with Biden. I mean, Trump used to love to do it. Obama used to love to do it. Or maybe love's a strong word, but he used to make a point to, you know, have some give and take. And I think the longer this president goes right now, the more you're hearing. You see him in an overseas trip like this, but as I was watching while I was on the air this morning, the answers, it always looks to me like he's, you know, squinting at the teleprompter
yes.
or sort of looking into the camera, but not quite with control over the situation. And I think he'd do himself some favors to do an impromptu sit down here or there, or you know, unplanned, like you were talking about with some of his predecessors.
Yep.
But it just doesn't seem to be doing himself any favors these days to bring chatter away from this narrative of lack of a plan.
Sure, no, that makes total sense. Let me pivot you over to a conversation I was having with Jon Stewart. He'd stopped by. We were talking about sort of a recap of the Republican convention this past weekend, and especially we were talking about the role of judges. We expect at any moment here, Bo, we're going to get that whatever the decision is that comes out on Roe versus Wade is going to come out. That is going to certainly elevate substantially the role of judges here in North Carolina. As we look at this issue, we pay a lot of attention on Congress. We pay a lot of attention at the executive level when there are races. But do we spend enough time on the judges issue in the state of North Carolina?
Well, I mean, let me take this.
Sure.
Slant on it. I was talking to Mulvaney this morning, and he said he spent the last 2 weeks in Australia. So I was asking him, I said, you've been following all this with the possible Roe versus Wade overturn and the Supreme trauma that's been happening? And he said, yes. But he said, it's amazing to me when I'm in other countries how people, the narrative overseas seems to be an incorrect one, which is that if this ruling comes out, it makes abortion illegal.
Right.
It does not. What it does is it kicks the decision to the states.
That's right.
And then the states do what they do. So it could lead to that, but it doesn't. It's not like a one foul swoop, and that's going to change everything. And he says, but more often than not, that's how the headline gets translated in other parts of the world. And again, back to your point about the folks now going to be a spotlight on judges in various states if this ends up being what we think it's going to be. And like you say, you know, I was wondering if it was going to come down at 10 a.m. this morning,
mm-hmm.
And it didn't, but everybody's kind of on standby here as to, you know, when this thing takes the next step.
My guess is they won't release it while the president's overseas. My guess is they'll do it when he's back, because he's going to need to be able to respond.
That would make sense. I think that would only make things more chaotic.
What do we got coming up on the big show tomorrow, my friend?
So big doings at Truist Field tomorrow. Of course, the Knights are in the middle of their season, but for the next several days, the ACC baseball tournament is happening for a second year at Truist Field. I think this is like a no-brainer.
Yep.
We have the ACC football championship, the basketball tournament comes here, and now the ACC baseball tournament is going to be there right down the street from us for the next several days. Dan Rakowski from the Charlotte Knights going to be in the studio with me tomorrow in the 9 o'clock hour and talking about an event that doesn't get talked about as much as basketball and football, but it's more sort of reinforcing Charlotte as the ACC hub, as I think it should be, and not places like Brooklyn, New York.
Indeed.
To me, it should be Greensboro, Atlanta maybe, but Charlotte should be in there with all these different championships. So he's going to be in tomorrow. Of course, we'll be watching the Supreme Court situation, as I know you are, and everything else from President Biden's overseas trip starting at 6 a.m. with Beth Troutman and me.
Okay, bonus question on the way out. Are you going to make an effort to go see the Braves trophy?
I'm not to like dead set on it. Is TJ dead set on that?
Yeah, he's pretty much dead set. He says yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I know people go and try to go put their hands on the Stanley Cup or some hockey fans. I don't know. I'd rather go see another Braves game.
Oh, well said. All right, buddy. Enjoy the night, my friend. We'll pick it up in the morning. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Today marks the end of an era, per Newsmax reporting. The last public payphone in New York City, located at 7th Avenue and 50th Street, was removed today, Monday, May 23rd. The city began removing the last remaining payphones in 2015 and replacing them with Link NYC kiosks, which provides free high-speed Wi-Fi, domestic calling, mobile device, 911, and 311 access. So, I'm trying to remember, like, what was the final price of a payphone call? Was it 25 cents? I think it was 25 cents was the last price I remember. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I remember a 10-cent call or a 5-cent call. But it is the end of an era. Let's start a new era with Terry, who's been patiently holding on forever. I'm sorry, Terry. Thank you for holding on.
You're fine, Brett.
What's on your mind today?
Just a comment. No song parody.
Yes.
But I am getting echoes, so I'm going to make my comment and hang up and listen, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
In 1958, Cuba was a vibrant, prosperous country, although somewhat corrupt under Batista. Mm-hmm. And in 1990s, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest countries in the Western Hemisphere, both in less than 5 years under communistic and socialistic rule. They went from wealth to poverty. Now the United States are threatened with the same outcome with the current Democrats leaning towards socialism. My question is, what is different here in this country that will keep us from becoming the same as those two countries or others? And thank you, Brett.
Thank you, Terry, for holding on as long as you did. And let me say this. There is no difference. You cannot beat, you cannot do socialism better. You cannot beat the system if you have more money or more goodies. It doesn't work. The only people that benefit in a totalitarian system, and make no mistake, there is no kind, soft, lovey-dovey socialism. Socialism is about turning the power of the state against the smallest minority there is, and that is the individual human being. When you decide to embrace on socialism, you have to understand what the motto of socialism is. The motto of socialism is one man, one vote, one time. Inevitably, socialism becomes tyrannical. Why? Because the group of people that get to administer the government are the people who have the power to remain in place while you get poorer and poorer. when you think about what happened in the Soviet Union and you think about what happened in Russia in the days after the Soviet Union, one thing is readily apparent. You have people who were in charge of different state interests in the Communist Party who ended up inheriting those exact same state interests under the oligarch system. Once upon a time, Vlad Putin was the prime minister there in the old Soviet Union that became the Russian Federation. And he just retained power after being elected, didn't leave, and appointed his cronies into the position of administering state assets. They immediately began figuring out ways to loot, steal, thieve all of those assets. And that's how you ended up with oligarchs. The oligarchs that run things in Russia are the same oligarchs that were running things at the time that Putin consolidated his power. And the people that are running things are not business geniuses. They're rotten mafiosi and thieves. They stole from the Russian people. While the people of Russia were starving in the streets, they were traveling internationally. Now, people can come out like AOC, who's, I do believe, economically speaking, an ignoramus. AOC, Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, the socialist wing of the Democratic Party can come out and can tell you that they can do it better, but they can only do it better with OPP. And it's only in a place like America that you can invent something, market something, sell something, and benefit from that thing that you developed, that you marketed, that you sold. Every app on your phone, every video game that you can download, every technological advancement that we enjoy as improvements in our lives, none of those were constructed and put together as an effort of the U.S. government. Oh, yes, of course, DARPA and the internet's bones and foundations. Sure, you can talk about that. But it took the free market or a freer market to take that and make it what it is today. And that's what you have to remember. Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, all of them have been beset by poverty for far too long. It is only through freedom that you have the ability to thrive and the ability to take your hand and put it out to the next generation of entrepreneur. Freedom is the natural state of life.
News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. We're checking in with our good friend Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6, which comes up just after 6.
Hence the name.
Hello, Mark Garrison.
Hello, Brett. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for checking in with us today.
Well, you know, we got some people listening to us with no air conditioning right now.
Oh, no. Are you okay? You want to take a second? Here, I'll take it from here until you're ready to jump back in here. Grab a sip of water. So how could you? I always wonder about how the electricity goes out during storms, because you would think like we would have redundancies. I don't know why that is. I have never thought about buying a generator, like I'm talking about one of those house generators, until I moved to Carolina. I never thought I would do that. I'm like, I never thought I would have one. Now I want one. And here's what's crazy. I've looked at them. Is he back? Okay. Mark Garrison, welcome back, my friend.
Well, that was embarrassing and strange. All of a sudden, my voice just decided to go south.
What's going on there, buddy?
I don't know. Maybe it's this old newsroom we have.
Yeah, hot tea.
Well, anyway, Anna's been keeping us up on the storms this afternoon. Duke Energy's hoping to have everybody back on around 8 tonight.
Wow.
Yeah, that might be a little ambitious when you see all the trees that are down, but we'll see. All right. Gas prices, your traveling companion this summer, guess what? Will be gas well over $4 a gallon.
Oh, God. God. I'm taking a road trip, too. I can't even
It'd be better
that.
To have your mother-in-law as a traveling companion in the back seat. Goodness gracious. The North Carolina Senate race is already getting really nasty on television, and the question is, did Sherry Beasley really let an accused child molester off the hook? We'll talk about that at 6:20.
All righty.
It's an interesting story.
Indeed.
Speed Week is coming up Friday at the Speedway. How does this sound? Pulled pork with corn chips and chili and cheese.
I'm there.
Oh, man. Cherry Cola pork belly.
All day.
Absolutely.
All day, every day.
So we'll talk to the Speedway folks, and then at 6:35, Anna, with her good, strong voice, will have the strange news of the week.
All right, you guys, you yeah. rest up there. You got 9 minutes to get to get it on.
You can find something to drink together. Here.
That's right. All right, my friend, I appreciate you being there. That's Mark Garrison, Charlotte at 6. So, yeah, so, like, I've been looking at – I'm not being solicitous. I'm just making an observation. You know, I'm looking at the fact that we get weather – look, I grew up in West Texas where the weather was hot. It was hot and then it was cold. I've lived in the Northeast. I understand what goes on in the Northeast. And I lived in San Diego, California, where, like, literally the weather guy on TV needs to wear a bandit's mask to collect his check because there's no weather. There's literally, other than fire and earthquakes, there's no weather on the West Coast in Southern California. So the fact of the matter is, I get here and I say to myself, oh, man, I probably should get like a generator thing. And I'm not getting one of those generator things that's like if you're got a tent. Like I'm thinking, I want the big kahuna, man. I want the big generator.
You don't want anything to go out.
I want everything that runs to run at its maximum possible potential.
Right.
To power my house. And I understand what that means, because if you're the house, if everybody's offline in the neighborhood and your house is happening, you are going to be inundated with visitors.
Right.
People are going to be like, so what do you got going on in here? And you're like, hey, I'm just watching TV. Oh, geez, here come 14 people. But I would totally do that. The people that I live near, I think are phenomenal. The people that I live far from, I don't think are phenomenal. Well, you see, you get how that works.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, it's like, so I have become now like a proliferator. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to get into a generator proliferation. Where I'm going to be like, you know what? Okay, can I... Like, not that I even own one. I don't own one. Would this have enough power to, say, power a walk-in freezer if I should say, like, a freezer truck adjacent to me, like, at the supermarket? Like, how do we do that? So I don't even know. Like, I wouldn't know what to get. I would just be like, give me the thing that's good for Armageddon.
Like, what's going to power your battery-powered car?
Well, see, that is a nightmare. You know, that's a... TJ, that's a great point, because I don't know what kind of power you need to power your battery-powered car.
Yeah.
Because, well, how much power goes in a 9-volt battery? I mean, Oh, you mean like a car to drive?
Right, yeah,
yeah. Oh, I thought you meant like just a little, okay.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at all the stuff that people have, and you're like, wow, all right. Like, I look around the neighborhood. I mean, I don't go look over fences, but I can deduce what people like. Okay, that place, they got a swimming pool over there.
Right.
They got a swimming pool and a hot tub. They got somebody's got a veranda. I don't even know what that's for.
No.
Then somebody else is over there. They've got another thing. They got like a porch swing. That's a little high end for me. Yeah. I don't need a porch swing.
Not much of a swinger.
I'm more of a. I like tire swings.
Oh, okay.
I like tire swings.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've been watching the story about monkeypox, and I've been noticing. Just for the record, ladies and gentlemen, nobody was on the dangers of escaped monkeys like we were months ago.
Months ago.
And so I'm thinking, like, you know, you've seen the commercials where you'll see. The gorilla attack the luggage that was very popular in the 70s. They'd throw Samsonite luggage in there, and the gorilla would try to destroy it. And then you'd see, like, the gorilla trying to grab the tire and, you know, attacking and all that. And so I'm sitting here, and I'm saying, what do I need in my yard more than a generator? I need something to keep the escaped monkeys that got out of Pennsylvania, which remember we talked about,
right.
The macaque monkeys that were running around Pennsylvania. The nice old lady tried to save them thinking they were cats for some reason. She got bit by a monkey. And I just go back to the original. Is this where this came from now? Like, did the monkey bite the lady and then the lady went to the doctor and then now that's where monkeypox is from? Ooh. Except for one thing.
Yeah.
I did research today.
Didn't come from there.
It doesn't come. Monkeypox was seen in monkeys, but monkeypox is not from monkeys.
Ah.
It's from rodents.
Ooh.
Which is even worse.
Big time.
So what I need is, I need a generator, a powerful generator on my property, powerful enough to power a laser weapon. Because if I got rodents coming at me, they're going to be flaming rodents running down the road. If I got infected macaque monkeys coming into my area, I need that thing like they had on the Death Star. That yes. Death Star laser that then shoots, it was going to destroy whatever. That's what I need that. So I need a generator capable of essentially taking out the Death Star or being like okay. the Death Star.
Fair enough.
And this is what I need. And I look at all this and I go, well, when the power goes out, only those with power will have the power. Does that make sense? I think that makes complete and total sense. And the good news is I don't have to put a rat in a wheel and make them run and spin to get the thing going, because I think those generators are all pretty much run on natural gas.
It's true.
And that's endless. There's an endless supply of natural gas, because apparently all I have to do is drill into the ground and tap the natural gas. Oh, no, that's not what it's from either. I'm going to have to rethink this whole thing on my way home tonight. But I'm going to listen to Charlotte at 6 on my way home. Thank you to TJ. And thank you to each and every one of you. I am Brett Witterbull. We'll do it again tomorrow starting at 3. News Talk 1110 993 WBT.
Doesn't it make you feel better? The pigs have won tonight. They can all sleep soundly, and everything is alright.